Moore. Mr. Beard.
May it please the court, Ms. Symington. The appeal this morning brings to the court's attention the proper interpretation to be given to a special rule set out in the sentencing guidelines concerning certain mail thefts that involve post boxes, collection boxes, relay boxes, and the like. I think there are two broader issues lurking in the background. The first is those being what is the proper use of presumptions in lieu of evidence sentencing, and then secondly, of course, always deference to be given to the Sentencing Commission's drafting authority. I'd like to make two specific points at the outset here. First of all, that to the extent that there is any ambiguity, the ambiguity was introduced below when the probation officer in the PSR addendum concluded that because more than one box was involved, each of those post boxes that had been implicated in this criminal scheme would be multiplied by the number 50 to arrive at 300 and some odd victims. Of course, as we set out at page 10 of the initial brief, that is a misstatement of the rule. The rule does not say that each collection box is considered to have 50. What the rule says is this, that, excuse me, in a theft, mail theft case that implicates certain items, that 50, if you will, speaking, is a freebie. We're going to set 50 victims at the minimum. To the extent that anyone has suggested that we are arguing that is a cap, I'd like to correct that. That is not what we're arguing. What we're suggesting is that 50 victims represents what the government need not even bother to prove. If one of those items is burgled or stolen, the government's going to get 50, but they still have to prove more than 50. I think that the relationship between the special rule itself and the evolution of the guideline bears this out, because if the court will note, excuse me, the commission didn't pull 50 out of thin air. When it articulated the presumed 50 victims here, what it was doing was dovetailing this special rule with that portion of the same guideline that says 50 victims will always qualify for a four-level enhancement. Break it down, what the commission is saying is if you have one of these offenses where a postal box, collection box is implicated, it will always receive the four-level enhancement. So it's carving out, if you will, increased culpability for purposes of guideline sentencing. The commission was not suggesting, nor are we, that the government, probation office, couldn't come in and prove more victims. Certainly can. But at that point, after 50, there has to be some proof. Now, what the government is suggesting and has suggested to the court is, well, you look at the number of boxes that might have been involved, and that you take that number, multiply it by 50 each, and those are all your victims. That is simply not what the rule says. I point out that that type of interpretation might lead to absurd results, perhaps even in this case, because we don't know, and the Commission's guidelines make this clear, we don't know that there are actually any victims in such a theft. In this particular case, the probation office had identified what it termed at least 35, and throughout the pre-sentence report it says at least 35 individuals were victims of this activity. It didn't say any more. Now, obviously, under our interpretation of a rule, that 35 would be increased, if you will, as a matter of law, to 50. But no more, not without any type of proof. The government would say, well, what if you had numerous boxes upon boxes upon boxes that had been stolen, that you might have a huge number of boxes, but only 50? No, once again, we would be saying, commission has said that type of affair would net you the four-level increase automatically because of the presumed 50. The government must still come forward with some proof. Now, I'd like to also point out, during our preparation for the argument this morning, we went back and looked not only at the amendments, but also at the history of the particular guideline, the amendment process, and we note that at no time has the Department of Justice, we could not find any time when the Department of Justice has ever come forward and asked for an interpretation of this special rule, notwithstanding the fact that the Department of Justice, of course, does have the ex officio member at the commission, and the Department of Justice routinely provides its input for not only proper interpretation to be given amendments, but also for what it thinks new amendments should be. So the position that the government is articulating today is truly novel. It doesn't have at least any historical support. And of course, if by chance we've missed any type of reference that the Department of Justice had made earlier to this process, obviously the Commission has not seen fit to incorporate this interpretation. I would also point out to the Court that the Commission has made abundantly manifest that it does in fact know what to do in cases where it wants to increase liability for increased numbers of items. And that wasn't artfully stated, but let me see if I can illustrate it for you. In the same guideline, if you have an offense where multiple credit cards have been stolen, say, the Commission itself has said, take the number of cards, you can multiply by a certain dollar figure, and the intended loss will be presumed to be increased, notwithstanding the fact that it might have been only one criminal episode, but multiple cards were involved. Likewise, say in a child pornography case, same Chapter 2 guideline offenses, if you have a video. A video is always presumed, a video of child pornography, it's always presumed to arrive at 75 images. Again, there's this multiplying provision, if you will. Likewise, in the gun statute, the firearm statute, 2K2.1, or 2K2.1, the guideline. If you have an increased number of firearms, again, you receive an increased set of enhancements. What I'm suggesting to the Court, by running through just those three examples, the Commission obviously knows how to increase culpability based on the number of items that might be involved, whether or not it's pornography images, whether or not it's firearms, whether or not it's credit cards. There simply is no language in this rule. There is, under a plain text reading, there is no language to suggest that you would increase the number of victims in the manner that the probation office and the government has suggested. And I think at this point it's also important to stop and say, and to ask the Court respectfully, to keep focused on the fact it is the number of victims, after all, that's at issue here. It's not the number of boxes, it is the number of victims. The dispute between 4-level and 6-level is centered in that provision of the guideline that says you increase the number of victims by either 4 or 6, depending on whether or not you have 50 to 250 victims or over 250.
If we agree with you and reverse and remand or vacate and remand, what would you have us advise the Court to be done? Would it be a new PSR? What's required, or do we even say anything?
On remand, the probation office certainly can submit a revised pre-sentence report, and I think at least they would do an addendum showing that what we have suggested is the correct interpretation of the rule. And then if there were additional evidence that had not been gathered before to show what other victims the government and the probation office might have been aware of, then ostensibly that addendum would reflect that. And I think that the question and then my response again drives home this fact. We're not suggesting that there's a cap on 50. We are suggesting that the first 50 are presumed. And this is why I said one of the broader issues is the use of presumptions in lieu of evidence. Under the government's theory here, let's just say that we had the same 60, we have 300. We don't know that there was ever even any mail in the other 4 or 5 boxes, or even the first. We know that at least 35 victims were implicated. We don't know. Now, the government suggested to you, well, if you read this provision the way that we've suggested, and then you read the sister provision, the special rule, that somehow our interpretation is inconsistent. And I respectfully disagree. What I would suggest to the Court is this. If you always keep in mind that the concern is arriving at the number of victims and that the Sentencing Commission pegged or set out the presumed 50 for cases of mailboxes because of proof problems and the attendant difficulties of knowing what's inside that box, you set out the 50, you're always going to have a 4-level increase. Now, in the sister provision that says, okay, if you have like burgled a, say like an apartment complex cluster of mailboxes and what have you, that the number of victims is ascertained by counting the number of little cubbyhole boxes, if you will, mailboxes. There's nothing inconsistent with that because...
It seems to me just the opposite, that it's much more consistent to say, based on the commission's explanation, that it's very difficult when you have a closed public receptacle, a mailbox, and the guy, someone pilfers through and only selects one or two pieces of mail because only those pieces of mail have bank information in them. Mm-hmm. It's very difficult to prove how many intended victims there were, whereas when you have a cluster, let's say there are 100 mailboxes in a cluster and he pilfers banking information from only one, the intended victims is still the number of collection boxes.
I think, well, with respect to the extent that you disagree, well, I disagree still. I think that, in fact, that the cluster situation is much easier because you know in one of those scenarios, you'll know the number of boxes, which will cabin, if you will, the number of victims, and you'll know the number, depending, say, if it were an apartment complex or a UPS store or whatever, you'll know the number of boxes that had been rented that were receiving mail that were not.
Exactly, but only, let's say only one, only information was taken from one. You
yes.
still count the, let's say there are 100, you still count the number in the cluster for the victims.
So purpose, you would have
even
one.
If there's one. In the closed mailbox, we don't know how many other pieces of mail he looked at or she looked at, examined, and that the commission's commentary says because of the proof problems, we're going to presume 50.
Precisely. We don't know, and I completely agree with you, and the commission has said, because we don't know, these will automatically receive presumptive 50 victims and the attendant four-level increase. It's not that the commission's giving a windfall, if you will, or an advantage, if you will, to the what I'm going to call the post-box scenarios, that it's saying.
That's because you can't count, whereas we can count on the collection side.
Well, we can't. We don't know necessarily what's inside the box. You're correct. So in some circumstances, depending on what's been reported missing and what have you, there is other evidence that comes.
We don't know how many pieces of mail were in the mailbox.
We don't. We don't know if there are any. And that cuts both ways. And that's why the commission, I think, has been actually quite nuanced in its approach, because it said, because we don't know what's inside the mailboxes, if anything, we're going to say 50. Because we know that these are places where mail is received in mass, and
so
we're going
if,
to take.
What if a defendant goes block to block and hits five different collection sites, and there are 100 boxes at each site? Do you multiply there?
Is this the cluster scenario
the
or
cluster
the
scenario?
If you have
only he or she chooses one mailbox at each site, but there. 100 mailboxes at each cluster.
In that scenario, the plain text of the second rule, if you will, say count the number of boxes. But it also says that that's also subject to proof rebuttals, if you will. And so the point is, the defendant in that situation could come in and say, well, there may have been 100 potential mailboxes here, but half of them had remained unrented or vacant, if you will. So that would be a compelling argument to reduce the total. The idea is to arrive with as much specificity as one can at the number of victims. And that, at least in terms of the second rule, that certainly by counting the number of boxes in the cluster, you can do that. The problem, of course, is with the first part of the rule.
Well, am I but correct that the probation office didn't read in the special rule about a case described? It just read about a collection box, but the case covers everything, and there's only one 50 enhancement.
Yes.
If you read case.
And that was to be my closing remark, and in the last 49 seconds, let's talk about that. The plain language says, in a case involving this item, comma, this item, excuse me, so on and so forth, it's 50. It doesn't say, for example, that if a post box, excuse me, a little postal truck like we've all seen was parked beside a blue mailbox and there were five satchels inside, post office satchels, that you would go 50 for the truck, 50 for each satchel, and 50 for the box beside it. It says in a case, it's going to be 50. This is why we set out that this is actually a plain text interpretation. And I had mentioned the other broad issue here, and that is deference to the commission. The commission has very carefully chosen its wording, and it said in these type of cases, a case, 50 is the presumed number of victims and no more. Other victims can be proven by evidence under a preponderance standard.
Right, I know your time is out, but
yes.
I'm not familiar. How many victims over 50 would have to be proven to get to the next level increase?
You need 200, more than 250, so 251, so another 201. Okay. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Beard. Ms. Simonson?
Leah Simonson for the government. Opposing counsel has, in his brief, mentioned different rules of statutory construction. Obviously, he's mentioned plain meaning today, but the rules of statutory construction actually support the district court's interpretation of this provision. And I want to focus on two here today. The first is the rule that this court must interpret the provision to avoid an absurd or logical conclusion. And the second is in peri materia. And that requires this court to look at the sister provision, which Mr. Beard mentioned, the cluster mailbox rule, and to construe this provision at issue in harmony with that provision so that they do not lead to inconsistent results. To avoid an absurd conclusion or absurd results, this court must construe the collection box provision the way the district court did. I want to give a real-life example, and that comes from this case, of why it's important to construe the provision to require 50 victims per receptacle breached. Here, on one day, from one collection box, the defendant stole 21 payroll checks that had been deposited by one company. They had 21 different addressees. We have no idea how many other pieces of mail the defendants had to rifle through to get those 21 payroll checks, but we can be sure that it was several. 50 victims for that one instance of that one breach of a collection box is certainly not a ridiculous estimate. That information comes from PSR paragraph 17, and that instance is the reason this investigation began. Now, we also know that within a six-month period during this scheme, Ms. Moore, the defendant here, used a website called publicdata.com. She looked up 1,300 different pieces of identifying information on various people and obtained the personal identifying information of more than 265 known people, including their names, addresses, dates of birth, and driver's license numbers. That comes from PSR paragraph 69. Now, although we know she also obtained some of that information from an employee at a check cashing place, it seems clear from the facts of these cases, or this case, that she obtained the great majority of those personal identifiers from the mail. So that's 1,300 inquiries she made onto this website, 265 people who the government could identify as having their personal information stolen. With those facts in mind, it seems ridiculous, frankly, to assume that the defendants only should have counted 50 victims.
Well, why doesn't it seem lazy by the probation officer not to go into what you've just described and say, okay, we'll just count 50 a box? Why isn't there evidence to support the enhancement?
Well, Your Honor, it's...
effort by the probation to go ahead and prove that.
There are proof problems with proving that this information came from specific mail stolen from the collection boxes. In other words, easier said than done. Mr. Beard points to the government to say, well, they could have just produced evidence. How would we do that if the defendants destroyed the mail that they stole, which happens in the great majority of these cases? And in fact, the reason for both the collection box provision
the easy answer is if you can't prove it, then you go back to the plain wording of the guideline, which says a case. It doesn't say a box.
Your Honor, the government disagrees that the plain language supports the defendant's argument. First, just to mention the explanation for both of the rules, the original rule, that's the collection box rule, the commission explained that a special rule is provided for application of the victim enhancement for offenses involving United States mail because of, first, the unique proof problems often attendant to such offenses, two, the frequently insignificant but difficult to quantify non-monetary losses in such offenses, and three, the importance of maintaining the integrity of the United States mail. I want to point out, because I do see, Judge Wiener, that you are focusing on the A case language. Both of the provisions here, the collection box provision and the mailbox cluster provision, or the apartment mailbox cluster provision, both start with a case. Yet we know, and the defendant agrees, that the second provision, the apartment cluster provision, clearly allows you to count each apartment cluster that was breached, even though it starts with a case.
What about exclusio unis, inclusio alterius? Why did they make it different if there wasn't a difference?
I don't think it's different. I think that the slight differences between the types of receptacles we're talking about explain how the wording of the sister provision is different. But when you're looking at exclusio unis, you look at the explanation for both to see if they should be construed the same or different. And the explanation that's in the amendment shows that they should be construed the same. I should have mentioned before that when I'm talking about the explanation for the original special rule, that comes from Amendment 617. That language is there. If you look at the explanation for the cluster mailbox rule, that is in Amendment 674. That language, Your Honor, says the rule, so it looks at these two provisions as a joint rule. It says the rule is expanded to include theft of mail from housing unit cluster boxes. The amendment provides a presumption that a theft from such a cluster box involves the number of victims corresponding to the number of mailboxes contained in the cluster box. The same rationale for the original special rule, that's the collection box rule, applies to this expansion. And then it lists the same reasons why there is an estimated number of victims, the unique proof problems in proving how much mail was stolen, the non-monetary losses, and the importance of maintaining the mail. And then it cites to Amendment 617, the amendment that added the original collection box rule. So it seems clear from the history of these two provisions, they are to be construed the same way. And although there could be slight differences in the wording, that to maintain consistency, they have to be construed in parallel fashion. And to further that, I want to point out that it is inconsistent. I'll move to the in pari materia argument specifically. It is inconsistent, and I've pointed this out in my brief on page 11, that Ms. Moore, breaking into one collection box, would have 50 presumed victims. And under the defendant's argument, if she broke into, as we know here, six collection boxes, she would still have 50 presumed victims. But yet, if she had simply chosen apartment cluster mailboxes, her victim total would be completely different under the defendant's.
And if she didn't have wings, she couldn't fly. But she didn't choose the other. She did this one. There are differences in between collection boxes and clusters, and the commission has recognized that by making two different rules.
Your Honor, the government maintains that it's really the same rule in two different forms, and that although the estimated number of victims per receptacle is different when you have a collection box versus an apartment cluster box, because in the apartment cluster box scenario, you know exactly how many, as Judge Owen pointed out, exactly how many individual mailboxes are in it, you still don't know how much mail was in it. You don't know if anyone on the day that it was broken into had stolen mail. So you are estimating the number of victims based on how much mail that cluster mailbox would, or how many people would deposit things in that cluster mailbox.
And the commission cut right through that and says, we're not going to make you do all that. If you're happy with a presumed 50, there you go.
But that, if you look at the type of receptacles that we're talking about, receptacles that would hold at least as much as an average apartment cluster mailbox, to think of 50 victims, no matter how many collection boxes you break into, does not make sense. We're talking about big receptacles here. Obviously, we all know what a big blue collection box is. Well, the other things I list are similarly large and can hold vast amounts of mail, much over 50 letters. For example, a relay box is those olive green boxes that you see sometimes by a collection box. They are the same size as a collection box. They are intended for letter carriers who are distributing mail along a route to pick up mail for about a block or two, so that the mail carrier does not have to carry mail for multiple blocks. So they go to that relay box, they take out a block's worth of mail, and then they deliver that. We are looking at a delivery vehicle, which obviously could hold many more than 50 letters per addressee. A satchel would probably be the smallest receptacle, but if you're thinking of 50 letters, that's about 50 letters.
They're talking about 50 victims, not 50 letters.
No, Your Honor, it would be about the same, because a victim is defined for purposes of stolen mail as an addressee or intended recipient. Although, of course, you could have certain letters that are for the same person. Most letters that you find in any sort of one of these postal collection boxes or satchels or carts would be for different addressees. So each different addressee is a different victim.
Get multiple envelopes every day in our home boxes, so that doesn't follow that there's one letter per victim in any one of these.
No, you're right. You can receive multiple items, but if you think of the types of receptacles we're talking about, we are not talking about someone taking mail out of our house mailbox. We're talking about depositories where people, mail is destined for many different locations, and the types of receptacles that we're talking about, like a cart also. A mail cart is listed as something. Well, we know, you know, what a mail cart looks like, and obviously in a mail cart there would usually be mail for many different types of, many different people, many different addressees. So we're talking about big receptacles where there would logically be mail destined for many different people. So 50 victims as an estimate for each type of receptacle is logical. Now, I want to also point out, when we're talking about both avoiding an absurd reading of this provision and imperi materia, that one important thing that happened in this case, that will happen in other stolen mail cases, is that you will have a difference in the relative culpability of different defendants based on the number of victims they put at risk, judged by the number of different collection boxes they broke into. Ms. Moore, in this case, was involved in the breach of 6 collection boxes. So her victim total was calculated to be 300. Because it was over 250, she got the 6th level enhancement. There were other defendants in this case who were less culpable. They were only involved in the breach of a single mailbox. So they got the 50 victim presumption and a 4 level enhancement. That, of course, allowed the district court to calculate the guideline range based on the relative culpability of defendants, and that goes along with...
Well, it wasn't the district court that calculated, it was the probation officer. And all the probation officer has to do is get an expert from the Postal Service to give statistics on the number of mails, the average number per recipient, and that's how you go over 50. But he didn't do that. He just... they're overworked, so he took the route of saying, okay, 50 times 6.
No,
that doesn't prove anything.
It's not because they're overworked. It's because that is what the rule provides, especially when you look at the sister provision. The sister provision does not require an apartment manager from the cluster box that is breached to come in and say, well, you know, on average, I think about, or the mail carrier who got mail from those boxes, say, on average, I think I got about 3 letters per individual mailbox, and then let's multiply that by the number of individual mailboxes in that cluster, and then let's get a different person who got mail out of other cluster mailboxes that might have been breached, and we'll add all of that together. No, that is not what this court has in fact done. In my 28J letter, I submitted United States versus Tellus, where the district court and the Fifth Circuit said, we multiply the number of personal mailboxes in a cluster by the number of clusters that were breached, and that's the total victim number. Now,
you and I were on the Sentencing Commission and wanted to reach 50 per box. We wouldn't have any trouble saying a case that involved one or more of these shall be considered involved at least 50 victims per unit. I mean, that's so easy. If they wanted to do that, that'd be the way to write it.
There are different ways for phrasing it, Your Honor. And we see from the provisions that the defendant herself has cited that there are different, the Sentencing Commission does not use the same language, which is something that is in the district court's favor here. The Sentencing Commission does not use the same language each time it intends there to be a multiplication of the number of items by a victim estimate. We have in 2G 2.2, which is the child pornography guideline, when you look at a video, how many images should a video count for, we have the word each. When you look at 2B 1.1, application note 3, you're talking about it discusses access devices and how much money should the intended loss amount be when someone uses an access device, and it says per access device. Here we have a collection box involves at least 50 victims. Now, the government contends that is clear enough, especially when you have the sister provision and the explanation to both of those provisions in the amendments that I have quoted, to support that it is yet another way of the Sentencing Commission showing that you should multiply 50 as the presumed number of victims by the number of receptacles that are breached. Now, back to the relative culpability point, you would have a difference, an inconsistency in judging relative culpability if you construe the collection box provision the way the defendant argues that you should, because with the cluster box provision, it is clear that if a defendant breaches multiple cluster apartment mailboxes, that they are to be held accountable for all of the mail, all of the individual mailboxes in all of those clusters. So it could be over 250 victims. If you have a less culpable defendant involved in that conspiracy who breaches 50 apartment cluster mailboxes, that person will only get a four-level enhancement. So you have a difference in culpability based on how involved that defendant was in that scheme. Here, you wouldn't have that under the defendant's reading. So Moore would get the same enhancement that all of her co-defendants would get, regardless of the fact that she was involved in the breach of six collection boxes, whereas at least three of her co-defendants were only involved in the breach of one collection box. So you would have inconsistent ways of measuring relative culpability in these two provisions if it were construed the way the defendant wants.
It doesn't say 50, it says at least 50, and all do to distinguish between her and the less culpable ones is bring in some evidence.
I want, on that point, Your Honor, I want to quote you some language from the Ninth Circuit when it was dealing with the same type of argument, but in relation to cluster mailboxes, because
you know the risk of quoting the Ninth to us.
I know the risk to the government from normally quoting the Ninth Circuit, but here it's actually on our side. So it's United States versus Niewald. It's a 2006 case. And I want to trying to express to you that these provisions are construed the same. In the sparse case law on either of these provisions, they are construed in the same manner because of the same problems inherent in estimating the amount of mail that is stolen from these types of receptacles. There, the defendant argued that he should have an estimated number of victims under 250. Because there were only 100 and something complaints about stolen mail, So therefore, it was unfair for the district court to hold him accountable for 250 or more victims. But the postal inspector said that he had no way of knowing from which mailboxes mail was stolen. And that goes back to the reason for these provisions in the first place. We can't tell how many mailboxes or how much mail was stolen from each item. And the court said that this testimony underscores the need for the special rule. The mail theft offense often eludes precise quantification. So really, the Sentencing Commission in these provisions was saying, this is our best guess. At least 50 victims, and it does say at least, Your Honor, at least. At least 50 victims per collection box, and at least the number of cluster mailboxes, or individual mailboxes in a cluster box. And that is how this provision should be construed. I see my time has elapsed. The government asks that the court affirm the judgment.
Thank you, ma'am. Mr. Beard?
The commission articulated a rule. I would respectfully invite the court to afford plain text interpretation to the rule. I don't think that portion of the rule is ambiguous.
If there had been 100 mailboxes tampered with and one piece of mail was taken, what would the victim count be?
The presumed victim, 100 relay boxes, I'm sorry, as opposed to cluster, 100 relay boxes under the reading of the rule, plain text, 50 are presumed, and then if the government could prove the additional victims, you would have at least, you said 100, you would have 100.
Let's say 100 mailboxes were tampered with.
Okay.
And more than 50 letters were taken, but they couldn't tell from which mailbox they came from.
50 presumed, but if they couldn't, you would have 100 total. But that's, again, you're saying if you had, well, let me back up. I don't know what you're saying. Forgive me. You would have 50 presumed, and then if there were any evidence brought forward by a preponderance to increase that number based on actual evidence as opposed to presumptions, you would have whatever that evidence showed.
So the fact that 100 mailboxes were tampered with, you presume only 50 victims.
You presume 50.
Even though we know that there were 100 victims, because every time you open a mailbox, you can presume there's at least one letter.
No, Your Honor, and I think this is rub. You start out with 50. 50 are a gimme. If you had 100.
So 200, 500 doesn't matter.
Absolutely, it
does
not matter.
How many mailboxes were invaded?
50 are presumed, and then you must come forward with more. The commission wrote this. Adversary here has suggested that there were many ways to write this, but that the way that it should be understood is their interpretation, and I understand why she would say that. The commission wrote the rule that it did in the provision we're actually looking at, which is not the cluster rule, it's actually the U.S. mail receptacles rule, because it understood the problems, the attendant proof problems, and it said, look, we're going to take these and we're automatically going to give the presumed 50 victims so that it qualifies for a four-level enhancement. It's not as though...
I just want to make clear, if it was 1,000 mailboxes, it's still 50.
Yes, and by the way, I would point out, if let's just say under the 1,000, let's say that 999 were empty the day that Ms. Moore or her Confederates had come by, and that there were no pieces of mail. Under the government's rationale, you would be having 1,000 times 50, even though there was no evidence of any victim, say, other than one. That, Ms. Simonton had said, well, we want to interpret this so that there's not, we don't arrive at absurd results. Well, yes, I would agree. But we can conjure hypotheticals that might cut one way or the other. And this is why I portrayed the commission's articulation of this rule as being very nuanced. They're saying automatically, you had at least 35 here. We don't know if there were actually more than 35. Guess what? You're still getting 50 because of the proof problems. That cuts to Ms. Moore's detriment. In another situation, it might, in another defendant, it might cut the other way, but automatically you're going to get the four-level increase. That is the punishment, if you will, and then if the government wants to come forward with evidence as opposed to presumption, it may do so. The government has said, well, that would be hard. Well, it might be hard, might be easy. That would depend on the facts of the case. Judge Wiener, I'm reluctant to characterize the probation officer as being lazy, but I certainly would.
I said overworked.
Yes, and then overworked. I definitely would agree with. I think, as I'd mentioned here, we have the use of presumption in lieu of evidence. The commission's going to give you 50, but after that, you've got to come forward. You must come forward.
Well, suppose you're right. What determines the size of a case?
I don't know.
You don't know.
I truly don't know, Judge Dennis. In some cases, I mean, this was a criminal episode that went for any number of years, but Ms. Moore's involvement was certainly not extensive with the entire period, as the PSR sets out. So we had something going on for a number of times. It was a case that was charged that involved the D6. That was the government's theory at the time.
It's up to the prosecutor.
I would think so, and typically is in other contexts, so I don't think that's remarkable. But this is a case that involved us. Just like I said earlier, if this was a case that involved a postal truck, the little bitty ones that drive over on the other side of the road, and a satchel and a mailbox, it would still be a case that involved those things, and it would still have 50 presumed without even breaking a sweat. But afterwards, there has to be a little bit of sweat, and there was no sweat here. There was no evidentiary sweat. It was presumption, with no support in the law, because the commission has obviously chosen not to write the rule the way that the government suggests it should be written today. And if it's any comfort to the United States, they can certainly come forward to the commission during the next amendment cycle and ask for a change in the rule. But until they do, the rule is to be given the plain text meaning. Thank you very much. We ask for remand.
Thank you, sir.